Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to Unblocking Crypto, episode number 113, and we're recording this on April Fool's Day, and I guess I should probably mention that none of this is going to be an April Fool's joke.
I'm totally fine with that. Yeah, just go ahead and get that out there so we're not having to say this is not an April Fool's joke.
So, Hal, good to see you again.
Hey, man, good to see you.
So, I know this past week, hasn't been as crazy as the past few weeks. Everything's been kind of trending sideways, and we're getting a little bit of a breather, but there's definitely some interesting things to talk about. So, I think one of the interesting things that I saw was a memo from the CIO of Bitwise, Matt Hogan, and he had sent out a memo to the investment professionals talking about a couple of really key points. And one is the Bitcoin halving is coming out. And two, now you're seeing that there are a couple of these investment professionals and national platforms that are very close to doing their due diligence. And he was, I think, even mentioning like Morgan Stanley almost in the next couple of weeks is going to come online. So the amount of Bitcoin that could flow into the ETFs is going to be pretty dramatic, considering that most of this investment professional group controls about $100 trillion. And his expectation is that they will put 1% at least into Bitcoin. And this is over the next couple of years, not the next couple of months. But at 1%, you're talking about $1 trillion that's going to be put in by these guys that control the money. And right now, I mean, I think at the time it was like 12 billion. I think we're up to like 15 billion that have gone in. So you're at 1% of all the Bitcoin or all the money that's going to flow into Bitcoin from these guys, and we still have 99% to go. So the roller coaster ride that's about to happen over the next couple of years is going to be really fun.
Yeah. So Wise has been my favorite follow on X because they talk so much. They're so transparent. Hey, we're putting in a lot of work. We're visiting these people. We're getting a lot of interest. They don't name names. I've got to assume they're telling the truth. Otherwise, that's their crypto native, you know, mantra that they have of being like the people's champion of Bitcoin ETFs is out the window. But they go on to podcasts and Twitter spaces, and they're tweeting and about what they're doing and what they're seeing and what clients are saying and all of this. And in addition to that, I didn't read that memo, but I did read that they're seeing more and more of 3-5% allocations for Bitcoin ETFs and less of the 1%. Essentially saying the 1% allocation was great because you could say, well, it's just 1%. If it goes to zero, then okay, no big deal. That 99% of the rest of your investments are going to be on average 7%. So you're going to go from 7-6%, and you rode the Bitcoin ride and it didn't work out. He said the chance of Bitcoin going to zero is so low that the 1% allocation doesn't make sense anymore. And now it's 3-5% for investment firms and model portfolios in which they have a decent belief in Bitcoin. And so it's like, what Bitcoin does every time, it gets in a little bit, it gets in more, and it gets in more, and it grows and grows. And so I think you'll see more and more bigger allocations to Bitcoin, even in the early stages. And so what he's saying, what you're saying about we're in the early stages of these institutional investments is in line with what they said before the ETFs were approved, in line with what they've been saying as far as how they approve other ETFs. So non-Bitcoin ETFs, any ETF that comes out has these institutions have a due diligence period where they like, okay, well, this thing needs to be alive for 3 months or 6 months or 12 months before we will even evaluate it. And so the same Bitwise guys a few months ago or maybe it was weeks, Bitcoin time warp is kind of tough to keep up with, but basically saying that the institutions are evaluating the Bitcoin ETFs way faster than they anticipated. And so, you combine that information with Larry Fink going on CNBC and saying it's the fastest ETF that's ever been created, fastest growing ETF in the history of ETFs. So you're like, okay, the train's leaving the station. I need to get my clients on this train. It may be the fastest train ever built. So yeah, there's if you pay attention to just the Bitwise guys, it's very encouraging for your bull thesis.
Yeah, and I know we kind of get spoiled over here in the U.S. with really sound money compared to a lot of the rest of the world. But when you look at places like Argentina, I mean, they have a new president who's very libertarian and trying to do some new things, but their inflation numbers just came out and they hit 207. I mean, they've been clocking around at like 25% for decades now. And I think back in 22, they hit like 70%. And then in 23, they passed not only 100%, but then 200%. And now they're at 274. So the amount of volume that Argentina is starting to see is record highs, right? And I think some of the companies down there have seen they like 10x usage from a Bitcoin perspective, and not even the stable coins, which is where I think in the past a lot of people were going, is they're just going straight to Bitcoin and they think that Bitcoin's going to go up long term. So why get in the stable coins when they can go to Bitcoin and possibly get some of the wealth that's been kind of wiped out over the last couple of years on their end?
Yeah, I think if I were in Argentina or any country where like the currency's falling apart, I would have the money that I need over the next few months in stable coins so that my purchasing power is only decreasing at the speed of the US dollar. And anything for long-term savings would be in Bitcoin because, you know, they don't have access to the U.S. stock market. They don't have access to a lot of things. So the easiest thing you can get into is Bitcoin and crypto. So I think I would have a super simple savings approach where it was like, all right, this money that's going to be weeks out that is going into stablecoins. You have got to get rid of those local currencies. They were just useless.
Yeah, no, it's definitely becoming a trend for sure. From another interesting thing that's happening, we talked a little bit about what real world assets were doing last week, and that whole area has exploded in the last week. And I think they were the second highest performing category last week, where most of those coins that were doing that jumped almost 70%+ on average. What's interesting is the total number of treasury notes that are tokenized on public blockchains just crossed over $1 billion. And I mean, last week, BlackRock's Buildle got $245 million in a week, right? So, I mean, it's tiny compared to some of the stuff that's going on from my Bitcoin ETF, but this is pretty interesting to watch, where if all these other real world assets are really going to be going on to public blockchains and not private blockchains internal to a lot of the big investment guys.
Yeah, it's definitely worth keeping an eye on, and especially on what BlackRock's doing. Just, you know, once you start to see the two worlds merge, these guys trying to figure out how to do it is worth keeping an eye on, because BlackRock has the resources to launch it, and they do not want their reputation tarnished by crashing and burning on one of the first things they do. So it's worth watching what they do and then seeing kind of what other people build on. So it's definitely interesting. I will say I did try, I took some of these old crypto tokens that I just kind of collected early on, and I was trying to buy the weird rando stuff that's like buried in like Coinbase wallet that you can't just buy on Coinbase. And man, I got it. I got to where I had like stable coins on different networks, but I didn't have any of those network tokens to spend as transaction costs. So I just had money locked up, and I'm like, this isn't worth it. I'm out. Just give me my Bitcoin. I just aged too much from 2017 to 2024. That I'm just too old to even play in this pool.
I thought you were about to tell me you started buying meme coins with some of this, and I was like, holy cow.
No, I was looking for those real world asset tokens, and yeah, because it was like you just, when it comes to the Bitcoin and crypto stuff, when you hear something a little bit, it's like, if you don't jump on it, then 2 weeks later, you're like, holy crap, I heard about that and it launched and blah, blah, blah. And basically I have garbage crypto tokens that I'll exchange for other garbage crypto tokens. Like the new garbage has a chance of going up. The old garbage is pretty much dead. So I'll just change the garbage around. I think I've got to where I'm just going to buy, instead I'm just going to buy the small amounts of Bitcoin with it instead of trying to spend what embarrassingly large amount of my time trying to figure out how to get a few hundred dollars worth of something stupid. So yeah, I think I'm just spoiled with the ease of just buying Bitcoin and whatever.
Well, Ondo Finance seems to be the leader right now in the real world assets space. Yeah. They're kind of the bigger one though too. So if you think they're going to do well, then they're probably the one to look at, but I have not done any of that stuff from a real world asset perspective.
Yeah.
So another thing, I know we talked a little bit about Litecoin, I think last week, but the CFTC just announced that Litecoin is now a commodity. Although I still don't think people really care as much about Litecoin anymore. I mean, like we talked about, is with now Bitcoin having the Lightning Rails, Lightning Network, why do people even want to use Litecoin anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when it was Justin Sun sold his Litecoin in 2017 or 18 or whatever, that was like...
It wasn't Justin Sun. It was Charlie, the creator of Litecoin, sold all his Litecoin. But yes, it was not, yeah, Justin Sun.
It's not Charlie Justin Sun. Yeah, that's right. And it never turned around since then. So I think it's interesting that it's in the news, or that the CFTC is even paying attention to it. I don't know where it stands as far as market cap relative to everything else, but I don't recall seeing it lately. I think it's kind of dwindled down, but yeah, I have fully exited all of the weirdo Litecoin positions. I mean, when I first did this, it was like Coinbase had Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Ethereum. So it was like, okay, well, I'll put a lot into Bitcoin and a little bit into these other two. And then you start learning about it, and then you're like, oh, okay, this is great. And then the founder sells his and says, oh, I don't want to have a conflict and this and that. And you're like, I don't know how I feel about this. And then the price tanks and you're like, okay, I get it now.
So another really interesting thing that's going on from a macro perspective that caught my attention was the Republic of Palau, which you probably don't even know where they are on the map, but east of the Philippines, I think, is where they are. They are the first sovereign nation to authorize a blockchain native digital residency program, which is kind of interesting. And really, what does that mean? I guess is probably most people's first question. What that will allow people to do is get an on-chain local ID, have a digital residency, and have a geography agnostic governance ability, right? So cost for this is like $248 a year. And I think you can get some discounts if you do it for 5 or 10 years. But what's kind of interesting is, if being in the US again, there's been a crap ton of airdrops that are not eligible for US citizens. So this is one of those things for $250 a year, you now are also a resident in the Republic of Palau, and you can kind of set everything up there. I think what they're planning on doing on the roadmap is actually having the ability to have a local phone number, a virtual phone number there, and then also a physical address as well. So it's kind of exciting to see. I've been reading a lot of books lately that talk about where the future is going, and the world is changing from having borders based on geography to borders based on communities online. And this is definitely one of those ways that's kind of changing the game of what's available to do out there.
Yeah. Put this on the list of like fascinating things to pay attention to, because it's like a real world VPN. Like I'm actually a dual citizen, one of the United States and one of whatever this is. And what, I don't know, man, like that's one. They talked about this a little bit when the metaverse was supposed to be the next thing, where you strap on your headset and and you might be sitting in the United States, but you're in a community of people of similar interests from a global standpoint. And, you know, you could start to build virtual governments and things like that. And so, you know, man, this is like when you're this early into the game, you just have no clue on where it's going to go. Also, it could go nowhere. So there's that.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. I'm intrigued to see what happens. But I mean, shoot, I've in the past joked that it'd be cool to have a dual citizenship. And my wife was in the Caribbean for school for a little while, but it's half or $250,000 to get a citizenship there, right? So this one is 100x cheaper and also gives you the ability to live there for like 270 days a year, tax-free and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of cool. Maybe it's a great way to get some tourism up. El Salvador definitely kind of started this whole, how can we get more people to be a citizen and provide these, 100 people a year or whatever it was, 1,000 people a year access, and now and get another country that's kind of changing the game. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, the El Salvador thing is working on me because I was looking at summer vacations, and I keep looking at El Salvador, and it's like, man, it would be cool to run down. It's not a long flight. It's not a big deal. And they've got Airbnbs on the beach that look cool. And it's like, I would never even look at it if it wasn't for Bitcoin. And so part of me wants to kind of reward people for jumping into Bitcoin. And I've heard, kind of mixed reviews on how El Salvador is doing as far as Bitcoin adoption and how different places accept it or don't. But I think, like everything, I'm more patient. Like, I understand these things take a lot of time. So when Bukele announced that it was going to be legal tender in 21, I was like, okay, this is going to take a long time for them to roll this out and for people to change their brains on how money works and all these different things. And so I'm like, well, 2024, that's a pretty long time. And you kind of need a second bull run for people to go from like curious and hearing about it to buying into it. And so it might be a decent time to run down there. I don't know that I'm going to get a dual citizenship in a Philippine or an island country off of the Philippines for a virtual passport, but I could go visit El Salvador. I like the beach. They have a volcano.
Yeah, we've talked about it, and there's probably one or two other people that I've talked to that have a lot of interest in it as well. So maybe we'll have to set up a trip one of these days.
I mean, there's a high probability I go this summer, so I'll get with you on what weeks I'm looking at.
All right, sounds good. So I know we've talked about AI being another theme that has been kind of crazy this year. And last week we chatted a little bit about Wyoming having this new concept of allowing pretty much DAOs to have actual rights and pay taxes and all that kind of stuff, which I think is kind of opening the doors to mergers from companies in the crypto space. And the first one that kind of just came up was 3 AI tokens. So Fetch.ai, SingularityNet, and Ocean Protocol are all planning to merge into a single platform. The voting is actually happening this week. So I think depending on which protocol, it's between the 2nd and the 7th of April. And I don't think there's anybody that's expecting for it not to happen. It will eliminate all three tokens and they will merge into a brand new token. So Fetch's token was FET and it will now get transferred over to ASI. And then for the Singularity Net and the Ocean Protocol, I think they come over at like 0.3443 X of whatever you have of that token. So interesting this is happening. I'm kind of intrigued to see where it goes. But I mean, you have three companies that were doing really well in the AI space now all joining forces. And this could be kind of exciting to see if this helps or hurts the space moving forward.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because if you just look at growth markets, what you have is you just have a ton of entrepreneurs enter the space and they all throw a bunch of stuff at the wall. Some of it sticks, some of them fail. And then of the ones that stick over time, you end up with consolidation where companies merge and combine and and leverage the different strengths. And so you end up with several large businesses coming out of it. And so for this to be happening in crypto right now seems super fast, but everything moves faster in crypto. So I think, you know, the first time it's happening is always a cool one to look at. So I don't know anything about any of those tokens, but some consolidation in a world where there's like 10,000 tokens. And I don't know how it's got to be 9,000 were just absolutely useless, you know, just popped up out of nowhere. But even if there's 1,000 or 1,500, if you start consolidating about 2, 3, 4 at a time, it becomes a manageable number of things to pay attention to, you know, relative to like stock market size quantities. So, you know, it'll be easier to pay attention to, and at least you can combine resources instead of having, you know, three companies with 10 engineers each. You could have one large company with 15 engineers. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Well, in the crypto space, pretty much everybody needs somebody else to work anyways, right? There's not many tokens out there that do everything that they need without being interoperable. I mean, so now if you're taking the best of all these three tokens and putting them under one roof, maybe it gives them an advantage over some of their competition. And I mean, shoot, if you look at what's going on in the S&P, that's all that's happening lately is M&As, right? So the S&P 20, 30 years ago compared to what it is now is completely different. And it's because these companies need to continue to buy or merge or acquire other companies to continue to grow. So maybe this helps them out. I don't know. It's like I said, it's still early, but it's really intriguing that three of the top 10, maybe even more of the AI companies out there are all merging. And that's exciting to see, I think, but it's still, I'm wondering what's going to happen with it at the same time.
Yeah. Put it on the list of like, I support trying stuff. So try it.
And then, so we had some, I would say pretty good news with the SBF sentencing last week. So he was sentenced to 25 years, which is what 4x what his lawyers were asking for and 25% of what the government was asking for. So it's kind of somewhere in the middle, and it doesn't sound like he's eligible for early release. And if it is, it's only like, I think 15% less of his sentence. So only a few years, but they do have a right to appeal within 14 days, which of course his attorney said they're going to. So we'll see what happens. But the judge, what I was reading, is pretty much came out and said SBF purged him or created perjury, I guess, whatever you say that, like three times. And he only named three instances that were really big, but he said it was probably way more than that. So he is not a fan. This definitely is a kind of a win for the crypto space. Hopefully it'll get him out of there. And now what will follow from there is probably all the other execs from FTX that were witnesses against him in the trial will probably get something as well moving forward.
Yeah. So I was listening to a live Spaces and when this was going down. And so somebody was live tweeting things that the judge was saying. The SBF talked and didn't at all. He really, it made it sound like SBF was like, I could have turned this around. Like this could have been a non-problem. FTX was fine. Alameda was the problem. I feel bad for the employees. Da, da, da. But it never really mentioned like, yeah, I know people committed suicide because I destroyed their net worth. And, you know, I feel sorry about this. And da, da, da. He never really did that. And so the judge kind of was saying, you know, that there's no real remorse here. And he said, even if you steal money and then go to Vegas and gamble, make three times the money and then give it to everybody, you still committed a crime. And if you get caught, you're going to get punished for it. And so it's like basically like, hey, dummy, this isn't how it works, man. Like if you commit a crime, period. And so it was, but the judge kept saying it, the way he was leading up, it was like, man, they're going to throw the book at this guy. Like the judge, he talked about witness tampering. He talked about the perjury stuff. He talked about all these different things that the guy did wrong. He said, basically, he doesn't feel like he learned his lesson. He could see him doing something like this again. And I'm like, holy cow. I think I think the full level of charges of everything was like over 100 years. And then once they dropped all of the political campaign fraud stuff so that politicians wouldn't get in trouble, I think that what was remaining was like 40 to 50 years. And then, so I'm like, dang, he's going to get like high 30s or 40 years. Like, holy crap. I think he's like 32. That puts him at 72, maybe late 60s if you like that. I heard the same thing about federal sentences. Like, you do not, you're not eligible for parole for anything greater than 15 or 20%. And it's not good behavior that gets you out early. It's cooperating to bust other people. And so I was like, dang, this guy's locked up and he's not going to get out to it. But at 25 years, he'll get out in his late 50s, I think, maybe mid 50s. So he's still be capable of getting some things done. But 20 years, 20 to 25 years in federal prison seems pretty awful. And so, one, I want this to be a deterrent for other crooks or other people that aren't crooks that just go down the slippery slope of my company's starting to fade. I need this. I need to pump some liquidity. I need to do this or that. It's like, oh, well, I'm staring at 20 plus years of jail time if I do this. You know, maybe I need to declare bankruptcy and just back out of this thing. Everybody gets 70, 80% of their funds. But I'll tell you, it was nice. Once again, the judge freaking gets it. He was saying that the SBF team kept saying that the creditors are paid in full. And he's like, stop saying that because they're getting paid in U.S. dollars for the value of their assets at the time of bankruptcy, which was the rock bottom of the market. So you're paying them 100% of what the value is, but that's only a third of what it is now, or a quarter or whatever. And so it's like, okay, this another judge sees through the crappy, you know, mainstream media headline style interpretation of things. So it's like, man, the judges and the legal system is really a nice backstop for crypto and Bitcoin issues that pop up. So the more of these judges that get it, the better. So I thought, you know, for me, man, it's like, I thought he was going to get hammered. 25 years is pretty rough. So, you know, it is what it is. Put it to sleep. Talk to him in 20 something years. I'm sure that there'll be more ripples from, you know, when the Caroline and the other guys that kind of turned on him, they get sentenced there a couple years, and we'll hear about it again. But for the most part, that thing's over. You know, clean out the junk and let's get back to Bitcoin and adoption and normal things, and not like leveraged yields and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And the other thing that kind of parlays into that, talking about the judicial system, understanding it, Craig Wright, we talked about last week, was declared not Satoshi Nakamoto. And there was a lot of worry that he was going to try to escape having to pay any penalties for wasting everybody's time for the past 4 years. So the judge over there just froze £6 million of his assets, which is just over like $7.5 million. And so that he would be hopefully responsible for paying some of this before he put it somewhere that nobody could access. So, yeah, I mean, it's the judicial systems are definitely helping out, I feel like, or at least trying to make things happen when you have bad actors in play.
Yeah, it just makes me feel like I'm on the right side of things when the legal system seems to be on my side of things. It's a good place to be. I would rather be there than on the flip side.
Yeah. And we talked about Nigeria somewhat putting a couple people on house arrest after they asked them to come to Nigeria and talk about what had happened. Well, one of those guys escaped, and now you have both of those people filing suit against Nigeria, against two government agencies, and they're kind of talking about that they are violating human rights over there. So we're going to see where this goes. But I guess now, I mean, when they were kind of holding him against their will and for no reason, after asking them to come over to have a conversation about what was going on and then locking him up with no reason, that's not good. And this is probably going to have some sort of blowback on Nigeria. I think they're asking for a formal apology and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the initial glimpse into what happens when countries start to lose control of their currency. They, as they're falling off the cliff, they're lashing out, trying to grab any, you know, twig or stick or vine to keep themselves afloat. And it doesn't really matter what rules they break because they're desperate. And so watch what happens to countries like Nigeria, because it seems to spread over time.
Yeah, they've been leading the crypto adoption for a while. So does this mean everybody else starts to do something similar? Hopefully
right.
They and learn
there's
from
a reason
Nigeria
they lead
don't
crypto.
Do that.
Yeah. You know, like they've got a currency problem, so people are jumping into whatever off ramps they can get to, and like this, Nigeria's been ahead of the curve. You know, I haven't heard this kind of thing from Turkey or Argentina and things like that. So I'm kind of curious to see what other countries are going to end up doing, you know, borderline illegal things.
Argentina seems like they have a different government in place than Nigeria at this point, but
yeah,
I guess time will tell. And then the last thing that I had on my end was some more WorldCoin news. And Portugal just put a halt on WorldCoin collecting their biometric data. And I think the halt's only for like 90 days as they determine whether or not this is actual legal for them to do. So I think so far you've had about 300,000 people from Portugal sign up. And one of the big problems is they're worried that it is some underage, I guess, kids that are doing this to try to get the money. But yeah, we'll see what happens here after the next 3 months. And if WorldCoin is able to go back to collecting data from Portugal citizens, I mean, we're hearing this is pretty common. I feel like every month or so we talk about a new country that's saying, okay, WorldCoin, stop. Let's look at this. So,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that will trade their biometric data for $1,000, $500. $40, like, that just doesn't matter to some people, man. They just don't see it.
Yeah. Anything else that I missed on my end?
Well, I will say, since we're April 1st, that means we closed March's end of month. It was the 7th green monthly candle in a row for Bitcoin. And so I was kind of looking at my monthly chart, and it's like, holy crap, man. March and February were months to not be on the sidelines for Bitcoin. I mean, the candles are crazy. So I don't know what happens, right? Because like we're effectively at all-time highs. And once you get to all-time highs, there's no technical analysis. There's no lines and charts and previous resistance and support lines and all that other crap. And so we're 20 days from the halving. Like, so April, we're going to get the halving. And where are we going from here? And like, I just don't see the downside, man. I saw where Tether bought another 8,000 or 9,000 Bitcoin. You know, you got the ETF sucking up thousands of Bitcoin a day on average. You've got the Mr. 100 that's buying a couple hundred Bitcoin every day. I mean, the buy pressure is so visible, and you're going to cut the new supply that's coming in half this month. So you've got the setup for a bull run is crazy, but I also thought that 4 years ago, and it got snuffed out. You know, we didn't really, you know, what we tripled the previous all time high, which is not exciting in Bitcoin terms. So I'm curious to see what happens. I'm curious to see if this run goes nuts and it kind of makes the previous run look like, well, the Luna, Terra Luna collapse, the Three Arrows collapse, the FTX collapse, all of those things, the China mining ban, all of that stuff really stifled the run up, and we didn't get, you know, the escalation that we should have gotten or would have gotten. And so if you look at the pattern of the four halvings at that point, the last bull run was actually like the outlier. So that's like the most bullish I can be. Otherwise, like, yeah, okay, we'll go into six figures for the first time ever. And at some point, everybody's going to start talking about Bitcoin again. It happened in 2017. It happened in 2021. Like, it's going to happen again. So Once everybody starts talking about it, that's when things get fun.
Yeah, to me, it's one of those things that you keep hearing the 150K. I think there was somebody that came out and talked about kind of the math behind the halving and what the value would be, and it's going to put Bitcoin at like 177K or something like that. And I was like, man, you keep hearing this 150, 170K number, yet with what we talked about earlier, where if we got 99% of the $1 trillion to go into Bitcoin still over the next couple of years, and that's not going to happen by the end of this year, are we really going to hit the peak in this year? I mean, I think the initial plan was sometime in late 2025, but will it still have the ups and downs and the cycles, or is this kind of the last cycle and you're about to have so many people in there from around the world and sovereign nations that they're not going to be selling and buying like everybody else was to try to take a bunch of profit? So is Samson Mao's prediction of $1 million by the end of the year possible? And with some of this stuff, if it really takes off, I guess it could be, but it would be great to see. I don't know. It's just, there's so much going on. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to expect, because I can build a strong case to where the reason that we're at an all-time high before the halving is we've had a sea change, right? Like the tide has changed. So the waves will be different. And so I can build that case all day. And if you go through at the, you know, let's just say we go through the normal cycle, 18 months after the halving, you know, October 2025, we're supposed to crash. But instead, the game's different, and holders of 20, 30, 40% of Bitcoin are zero sellers, and another 40% they're willing to sell 5-10% of their stack, not 100% like some of the Bitcoin speculative guys do. Then if there's no sellers 18 months from now, the price doesn't decline. And so to me, there's tons of buyers at any price that we haven't had before. And they're deep pocket guys. They're not just retail people that are interested in the short term. So I put me on the list of thinking this thing's going to run. And last time we heard the word super cycle over and over and over again, I got sick of it, and it was anything but. It was the opposite of a super cycle last time. So I'm not willing to put any sort of high probability that this thing goes up and never comes down, but there is a low probability that this thing goes up and never comes down. I'm willing to say that.
Yeah. Well, a lot more to happen here throughout the next 12 to 18 months for sure. But it's still trending in the right direction, right? There's nothing that is stuffing it down, and now clearing up the FTX mess, getting rid of the rest of these liquidations on all these bankrupt companies, that will only help here in the next month or so too.
Yeah. And I mean, and eventually they're going to have to drop some interest rates and money's going to flow, and the people are going to get out of these 5%, you know, do nothing cash funds and look for escalation and yield. And it's going to push money. Money's going to slide around. So some of that money is going to find Bitcoin, and whether it's through the ETFs or not. So like there's Bitcoin crypto reasons to be bullish, and there's macro traditional finance reasons to be bullish. Like it's tough not to sell some real estate and buy more Bitcoin, even at $70,000 of Bitcoin. It's pretty dumb, man. And it's like, This is the first time where like my bags are packed and I'm just watching. So it's less stressful, and I don't have this feeling of, oh man, I should have done X, Y, or Z or bought more at Y. Like I got where I want to be. I can sit back and watch, you know, let's go for a ride.
Awesome. Well, Hal, as always, great catching up, and we'll see what happens over the next week.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
See ya.
See ya. Bye.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto
how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.